Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. My name is Doug Cunnington, and today I'm pumped because I get to talk to my friends, the Fioneers. We're going to chat with Jess and Corey. And how are y'all doing today?
Doing really well.
Cool. So for the people that are watching on YouTube, you can see that they each have their own setup, which is great. We're going to have very good audio. Very excited because we haven't talked on the show in a couple years, but I did see you when we were in Cincinnati, able to chat just a few minutes. And I was like, man, I meant to get in touch. So here we are. I finally got this scheduled. And I do have a little bit of an intro for you guys here. But you know what? You guys speak and you are comfortable doing your own intros. Like, how did you get into this world? So I'm just going to kick it over for like a minute or two of an intro, and either one of you can pick this up. And then we're going to talk about a very interesting topic, which I'll introduce after we hear from y'all.
Sure. So we are the Fioneers. We exist to help people build financial freedom and use it to design lives that they truly love. So when we started our blog back in the day, right, it was early FIRE movement, but still in like phase one of the FIRE movement, where the focus was still on intense frugality, hustling, grinding it out, getting to FIRE as fast as you possibly can. And around that time, people started talking about maybe, you know, they reached FI and maybe you want to take a slower path. And so we really took that to heart and really became one of the voices in the financial independence space that started doing that.
Do you remember like the first set of bloggers or couple people that did talk about like slowing things down just a little bit?
Definitely Carl from 1500 Days. So I think it was around that time that he started talking about how his path to financial independence felt like a death march. And then Brandon Gantt from The Mad Fiantist, he reached FI and started releasing some episodes on his podcast about how he had pushed so hard toward FI and gotten so miserable and disconnected that like everything was about the money and nothing about quality of life. And then I also remember vividly an interview from J.D. Roth on the Afford Anything podcast in 2018, where he talked about how he reached financial independence and it made him more miserable because he now no longer had any excuses for the problems and the challenges that were happening in his life. And then realized that all of the things that, like, he could have started working on solving all of those problems a lot earlier. And so those three folks definitely were significant inspirations for us.
So we have an email today, and you two are specifically qualified to help answer. And we'll kind of have a round table. So you guys are the experts, but I definitely have opinions and I'm going to share them in the show here. So we'll go through. If people want to like read sort of the full text of the email, I'll post it. There'll be show notes and all that kind of stuff in there. And basically, I'm going to summarize the email and I'll go into a few more details, but basically, someone is in a pretty good spot. However, they're thinking, I want to try to reach FI as soon as possible so that I can focus on other stuff, or should I relax a little bit? So like I said, you two are perfect to get into it for the reasons, you know, you already described like how you like kind of hooked on and thought about reaching FI differently, a little bit slower, introduce the slow FI, coast FI concepts, and you know, maybe not introduced, but like you popularized it and you started using that term over and over again, which is like a great, just from a marketing perspective, it's a really good way to attach like your ideas and what you're doing to those names. So it's perfect. And we can talk about that a little bit more too. So anything else before I read the email from, you know what, we'll make up a name. We'll call them Carl. We'll call him Carl. So anything else to add before I read the email here?
Now I'm looking forward to the conversation with Carl.
Perfect. And yeah, we made up the name. So I'm going to read it the best I can. So here we go. I'm a 38-year-old single individual with a $2 million net worth. That is 1.5 in ETFs, and the rest is in their home equity. And currently, they're at a CoSFI situation with about $50,000 of annual expenses, excluding a $300,000 mortgage. And while they are content with their lower middle management job, earning about $100,000 to $120,000 annually, they find it a bit boring. So they further say, my portfolio generates around $50,000 in dividends covering the expenses. They go on a little deeper here. So they say, I want to aspire to a more luxurious, in air quotes, champagne lifestyle, and want to financially support my parents and sister, like paying off their mortgage, getting them a larger home, taking care of healthcare. My goal is fat fire within the next 5 years to enable luxury travel, focus on relationships, and a more relaxed lifestyle. They've been exploring the idea of like side hustles, including content creation online as an income stream in the future, and they're hoping they'll enjoy it, but they're hesitant about screen time and they're unsure if it's actually worth the effort. I'm torn between focusing on my current job and enjoying downtime versus dedicating that time to building an online income. And I followed up with Carl. Again, this is not Carl Jensen. This is a made-up Carl. And I just made things confusing by doing that, but we're sticking with it at this point. So I asked if there's any more follow-ups. They said, I'm now more energized about content creation and want to pursue it as a passion project. However, this has triggered a return to a scarcity mindset, a strong desire to accelerate fire to focus on this without financial worries. So that's the summary. There's a few more details. Again, I'll post it if people want to check it out. So we're gonna hop in, and what are your initial thoughts on the financial position? They've reached basically CoSFI at 38. $2 million net worth. That's a lot, especially for a single person. So Corey, why don't you kick it off first and then we'll hear from Jess. What do you think?
Yeah, my initial thoughts is it's like incredible. Like they've made so much progress on their journey as a 38-year-old. It's incredible like how much they've accomplished. And it's not just like the numbers and having so many zeros in their bank accounts. It's the freedom that allows them to then leverage to then use and build a life that they love. So I think like kudos to you. And like, we'll get into like all the other questions, I'm sure. But initially, it's like, that's incredible. And you should be like patting yourself on the back.
Agreed. Though one thing that I would say is I read this and I think, this person is financially independent already for a spending of $50,000, right? So if they only wanted to spend $50,000 or even $60,000, right? $60,000, I think, is what would be, yeah, $60,000 would be a fine number of $1.5 million if you multiply that by 25. So they're actually, for their current spending level, beyond full financial independence. Right. And so they're saying they're CoSFI, but in actuality, like they've reached FI for their current spending level, though they do want to have that fat fire spending level. So I do understand that piece of it. And before this, I was actually looking at the numbers because I was like, huh, I wonder if I ran through some scenarios, like what does this actually look like? And they want, you know, if they wanted to reach full financial independence for spending of, say, I would say I put in like $85,000 because I can't imagine someone who currently spends $45,000 to $50,000, like doubling their expenses, even if they wanted to help out family. Like this means they could spend $30,000 to $40,000 more than they currently spend. It's crazy. I mean, in my mind, like they can absolutely scale this back earlier. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested in diving into it because I was running some scenarios and realized like even if they scaled back and only generated like $30,000 of income for the next 5-6 years, they would still, they would reach this ability to spend $85K a year by the age of like 43, 44. And so, yeah, so I'm excited to dive in because I think there's some real opportunities here.
She's jumping straight to the punchline.
I know.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, yeah. It saves a lot of time. And I think I agree with exactly what y'all said, so I won't repeat any of that. I think what we have here is more like a psychological thing. So they do highlight the scarcity mindset. And I think, you know, to your point, Jess, it's like they're talking about spending with the numbers you plugged in, like 20 to like maybe 35 or 40% more, which is a pretty like high like jump. Now, the other thing is for some reason, every family is different, right? So I can't tell you the answer on this one. They're like, I want to take care of my sibling and my parents, and like it was like pay off their mortgage. And Carl, this is a tough love. So you sent an email because I'm not going to bullshit you here, but pay off their mortgage, get them a larger home. Like, what the fuck? Like, you don't have to buy everything for everyone. Like, it's probably too much. And I don't know if you've talked to them or anything, but like, I would suspect they're not expecting that from you. Like, that's a very large expectation. So I think maybe you want to do that, but maybe they're not expecting it and you don't need to do it. And we'll get into some of the other details. You know, you talk about the champagne lifestyle and like you could test that stuff out. You don't automatically have to go from like, you know, 50K to spending 150K, which would be like a pretty dramatic jump. So those are my initial thoughts after like, congratulations, you've done a really good job. All that stuff's really awesome. But like, there's pieces in there where it's like, you're in a good spot. You don't have to act like you did when you were say 25 and you were kind of scraping the couch cushions for change like we did. And, you know, maybe not spending money on, you know, vacations and stuff like that. So, okay. We're in a good spot. The champagne lifestyle. Do you guys have any comments on that or maybe observations on your spending when you guys stopped working? And you could give us some timelines too, because this is a spectrum and a sliding scale. We're always testing it, but either of you could jump in here.
Yeah, I think for us, as it comes to our journey, we did reach a point where we increased our spending. And it's not common in the FI space to, or at least historically it hasn't been, but I think it is becoming more popular these days to embrace that the purpose of financial independence isn't just to like limit your spending to as low as possible and like have as much confidence as possible that you're never going to run out of money. Instead, it's like money is a tool and it's to be used to enjoy and to live a life that you're actually going to enjoy. And so for us, there was certainly a process where we did cut our spending, but we eventually reached that point where we could spend more. And it was prompted more by like an interest. So we, during COVID years, we stumbled into van life, like down a YouTube rabbit hole and fell in love with this idea. We ended up renting a camper van to test out this idea. And then we like came back from that rental and said like, wow, we really love this. Let's go buy and convert our own camper van. And knowing us, like if anyone knows us well, it's like we don't do anything like half measure or halfway. It's like we got to do it all the way. And so we spent a lot of money on the camper van. I think it was like $150,000 in total. And so we drastically reduced our savings rate from a point where we were saving over half of our income to now to like 20%. Over a 2-year period. And so it was a big change, but it was like, it was motivated by this passion for van life and this new hobby. And so I think when you find something that appeals to you, it becomes a little bit easier to spend. And so I love this idea of this like champagne lifestyle. I'd never heard it referred to as that, but I love how it's coined, and I think they should embrace it. And if that's what they're really interested and motivated by, like by all means, move forward with it, but make sure it's motivated by the right reasons right? And so if it's out of some guilt or other reasons to support the family, by like think through that critically. But if it's for the right reasons, I think it's a really great idea.
I would also say that when we decided to invest this $150K into the camper van, and I'm saying invest for a reason, right? We invested it in our happiness, in our quality of life, in adventure, in building the life that we wanted to have. Could we have invested that money in the stock market and reached full financial independence right now? Possibly. Had we 4 years ago invested $150K more, we could very well be close to full FI right now. However, it kind of goes back to this idea of the ideal die was zero, where we could wait to have these experiences that we want to have in our lives, right? We could push and hustle all the way through to reach full financial independence and then do those things. Or we could design and build the lives that we want along the way. And for us, that was building out and traveling in the camper van before reaching FI. It extended our FI timeline by several years. But for us, that's something that was absolutely worth it. And, you know, these days I talked to my parents who built out their own camper, or they didn't build one, they bought their own camper van a couple of years ago. And they say things like, "We are so glad that you guys get to do this in your 30s. And there's so many experiences and like boondocking in the middle of nowhere and like ways of being that we like things that we can do in the camper van that like they can't do or choose not to do because it's not as comfortable of a thing to do in your late 60s. And so, you know, and I know this person is thinking, Carl is thinking about, you know, he wants to be full five by 43, but are there things that he could miss out on in the next 5 years or so because he's pushing so hard toward this full financial independence number so quickly?
Yeah, yeah. That's such a good point, Jess. Like, increasing your spending doesn't mean that you have to then like grind it out for another 5 years. And like, I think that's at least how we approach it is, it's not an all or nothing. You don't have to then, like, because I want to increase my spending in retirement, I have to then grind it out. I think you can do both.
Right. Mm-hmm. I like the way you frame the investment too. That's kind of how I justify buying so many guitars. My wife doesn't, she's not totally on board, though, I'll be honest with you. But the way we can look at it, because I guess the early FI movement, and like Carl and Brandon would probably say this, like they had their spreadsheets and a lot of information. And usually they're trying to optimize for returns monetarily. But there's a whole other spectrum. And part of it could be like happiness and enjoyment. And for me, like autonomy and free time is huge, which we'll get into, like the side hustles. And like, I've worked for myself for the last 10 years or so. And it just suits me so much better than working, especially at a corporation, but like working for anyone else is difficult for me. It's very difficult. But like, if you were to have like your spreadsheet and you have all your investments in the portfolio, but then you also have like some tabs on, I mean, hey, we're going to try to quantify it, right? You try to quantify your happiness or free time or whatever. And like, I can relate to Carl's situation where it's just like, the job kind of sucks. It's like, okay. I was in middle management, which was perfect for me because you could get lost in the shuffle and do very little work, send a lot of emails. And, you know, now you can schedule emails to go out, make it look like you're working all day long, but really you're just doing it a short time. And I think I was so unhappy, like going through the BS of like performance reviews and the promotions and all the politics. And it was just dumb to me. So once I got out of that, I was very happy. I was like, this is great. Like I can do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it, and like work with whoever I want to with at any time and whoever I want to work with, you know? So anyway, I can keep going on and on with that. Yeah.
One thing I want to jump into and say about this idea of the champagne lifestyle was though we did make this large investment, right, in ourselves, in an adventure and happiness, our average everyday expenses have gone down. And they did once I left full-time work. Those average everyday expenses went down because we were happier. And therefore, we didn't spend as much money without even realizing it on convenience, escape, right? Things that would be considered in those categories. So like takeout, easy to make foods, the random like thing you buy off Amazon to get that hit of dopamine, right? We found that we were spending our money on things that we really valued. And so I actually can't, I have a hard time imagining that besides like some splurges and some big investments here and there, like I feel like I can't imagine the champagne lifestyle being twice as expensive as what someone is currently spending now, unless their life situation dramatically changes.
Very good. Great points. I'll give a couple other thoughts and then we'll move on to the next area here. We went to a show, like theater, musical thing, and typically I don't get like the concessions or whatever. But for some reason, I was like, I'm a little bit tired. You know what? I know why. I drank too much the day before. All right. I'll admit it. I was a little hungover. And I was like, you know what? I'm a little bit tired. I'm going to get a coffee. And then I was like, they have popcorn. It was a little shop of horrors. So the popcorn, the kettle corn was like green and red, you know? So I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to get that too. And then I also was like, you know what? I'm going to get a soft drink. So I got a Sprite, which all that stuff at a theater in downtown Denver, it was like 20 fucking dollars. I was like, this is, I usually don't get it. And I would talk myself out, but I was like, I'm just going to do it. And after talking to people that have been retired for like 5 to 10 years, like I am realizing like, number one, that stuff is kind of in the budget. Like, we increased our like overall spending by a pretty dramatic, or not overall spending, our budgeted, like the amount we can spend was like way more than what we normally spent. So like last year, my wife retired, she was off for a full year. We were under budget by something like 25, 28%. So it's just, and we did everything that we wanted to do. It was one of the best years. We went on vacations, we did all this stuff. And we were so far under budget. So I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. If I get expensive concessions like once in a while, it's totally okay. So like, I get it. And it's cool to have that, the freedom to do it. Although if I wasn't hungover, I think my normal brain would have been like, don't get that stuff. Just drink water. Just get one of them. You don't need all three, man. Like that was just too much. Do you guys get concessions when you go to the movies or other stuff like that?
Not usually.
Yeah, not usually. Usually like a big Diet Coke sometimes, but like that's, yeah. But I generally don't like popcorn. And so I'm like, and I don't want to like eat too much sugar generally. So yeah. So Diet Coke is where I go.
It was good. Mm-hmm. It was good when I had it. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely out of character. Okay. So a couple other things. I want to talk a little bit about helping the family. Again, I don't know if the family expectation is for the person to do that, but do you guys have any thoughts on factoring in those pretty substantial and generous goals into their FIRE planning, which is, I mean, that would dramatically change like, you know, 40, 50K a year to 150K if you're paying for like three other people.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could see situations in which this would be important to someone. And if that is the case, then they would just need to plan for it. And, you know, I certainly know people who were immigrants and their family sort of supported them to be able to do, you know, get an education. And they're, you know, sort of the ones in the family who are able to, where, you know, we're able to climb the corporate ladder and get the high paying job. And so sometimes there are expectations that you sort of pay it back or pay it forward. I would tend to think that what this person is thinking that they want to do is more than necessary, though, you know, potentially, if I was in those shoes, I would definitely want to pay that sort of forward to my parents. but potentially not to siblings, or to a smaller extent to siblings. However, I think it would be helpful to think through what is it that I want to do for them, and then actually figure out how much that would cost. Because I think sometimes we get in this place of like the unknown, where when we're planning financially, we're like, oh, I gotta just make this huge buffer because I don't know how much things are going to cost. When I think sometimes the reality is that we can predict them, or predict them within a particular range to get, you know, to get some rough numbers. And so, yeah, I would encourage them to think about like, what do they really want to do? What is expected of them versus what do they want to do? And actually tallying up those costs to see what the impact would be, because it might not be quite as high as they're thinking.
Yeah, I think similarly, I think being very specific about what it is they want to do in terms of dollar amount and even timeline, right? So like a $50,000 expense to help out a family member now is much different than 20 years from now too, and could impact your FI timeline in different ways. And then, yeah, as Jess was saying, like it's a little hard to gauge the motivation and the details here without a full context. But I think just thinking through and making sure it's not motivated for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, or giving someone a lump sum of like $100,000 versus giving them $10,000 over the course of 10 years is different.
And I think, yeah, just understanding the expectations, and you guys bring up great points. And like I said, every family's different, so they'll have to figure that out on their own. Okay, very good. Any other thoughts on that before we talk about the job situation?
No.
Great. All right. So they don't love their job. If they're a little bit bored. And I'm curious about your jobs and when you left, and if you have any relatable stories that might guide this person a little bit. And Corey, why don't you kick it off? Because you've been most recent retired at this point. So yeah, what's your story?
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I left my traditional job 2 years ago, almost to the month. It's like 2 years ago and a couple of months. I wouldn't say I was bored in my situation, but my job situation definitely changed over time. So I was one of those people that loved or enjoyed my job for many years that I was at. And so I continued to work even past the point where I could have transitioned earlier, maybe not fully retired, but I could have made the transition to self-employment or doing other work many years before I did. And the reason I stayed around was because I enjoyed the work I was doing, and it was quite busy. And I'm also probably projecting a little bit of my experience too, whereas like I was so busy that it was hard to focus on other things while I was working full time. So I read a little bit into this, but again, I could be projecting my own experience here. Now that I'm on the other side and have left my day job, I do think there could have been other situations where I eased off more slowly. So instead of just quitting and jumping to taking a mini retirement, which is effectively what I did before transitioning to self-employment, I could have worked part-time or found a way to do contract work. And so it didn't have to be all or nothing. And so I think this could be true for Carl's case here, where Carl could transition more slowly. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And I think that could be a really great way to then build a life outside of work and not feel so bored in life in general and needing that work to just kind of keep you busy.
And then speaking of my situation, it's interesting because I feel like Corey's situation and my situation could be different paths that this person could take, right? So this person, similar to for Corey's situation, it's working full-time up to a certain point, doesn't have to be full fire, but to then take a mini retirement to then build up a business and, you know, get into it. Whereas the approach that I took, and I quit my job, 4.5 years ago now, to become an entrepreneur, but I was working part-time. So I did take that step of saying, I'm going to take my foot off the gas of the traditional career and income. And so I took a job where I made 50% less and I worked 50% less and it was easy and frankly, a little bit boring, but it provided me with income and stability while I was building up the coaching business part of the Fioneers and really gave me the time and space to be able to build that up and get it to a point where I felt like, this thing has legs, and then decided that I could quit and sort of take the leap to full-time entrepreneurship. And so, yeah, so I feel like there's, you know, a couple of different options that Carl could take, which could be, you know, similar to Corey's approach or similar to my approach. But I think the one thing that I would say is I feel if you're not happy in your current situation, it's hard to imagine being on the other side of it, like being okay with staying in that situation for another 5 years and not regretting it. You know, like how much of the experiences that we've had in the last 5 years, like I would absolutely regret not building out the camper van, not taking the several months long road trips across the country and, you know, being able to do the work that I love and have the freedom and flexibility to do that and focus on my health and relationships and all of those things. I would definitely, looking back, I would regret having stayed in my job for 5 more years. Hmm.
You alluded to the self-employment and doing work that you love, which is around content creation and being an entrepreneur. So we're going to get to that in a second. You did remind me of like my last little stretch of working at a corporate job. And Jess, you were like, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do some of this travel. I'm not recommending that many people do this, but like some people like myself are able to detach and just compartmentalize. So we went on a road trip to Montana for 3 months and we did like a slow travel thing. And I didn't check with my company where I was working remotely at the time, but this was like in 2015 before it was so common. And we weren't actually, y'all spent some time up in the Glacier area, right? Whitefish and that spot. Yeah. Yeah. Cool spot. If people get to visit, I had the balls to do this. So I had like a BlackBerry and I just had the chat on my phone and we like went into Glacier that does not have very good cell service. So I was just blowing stuff off. What I did, I delegated everything to my team except like the 2 meetings that I had to lead. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the national park. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm like, I'm in Whitefish and I'm not going to Glacier and blah, blah, blah. So it all mostly worked out okay. Eventually I got laid off. So kind of see where that that went. But here I am now. Everything turned out great. But some people are able to just be like, you know what? I'm not playing along with the game. I'm getting good performance reviews. I have a team. Everything's taken care of. If you don't like it that I'm taking every Friday off, like you deal with that. And then they laid me off, so they did deal with it. But before we get to the content creation stuff, we have a sponsor, and that is Ghostbed. They've been helping out the show for a little while. And I'm curious, so you guys were in the camper van. What's the sleeping situation in there? Do you sleep well in there? Do you get hot? Do you get cold? Is the mattress too thin? What's the situation?
I think the biggest thing is that we sleep. So we have what are called flares. So like little bump outs. So we can sleep side to side in the van, but which sounds great because then it maximizes space in the van for the build out. But the downside is that then you have to sleep with your head and your feet, like right in these bump outs. And like you're prone for hitting your head multiple times throughout the night. And then like very limited left to right space too. So it's cozy would be optimistic, you know, it's very tight in there.
That's a nice way to put it, huh? Okay. Yeah, Jess, what do you have to add about sleeping on a camper?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that's the biggest thing. And we also decided to have the bed be a bit higher so that we could fit bikes underneath the bed. So we have like a garage storage space underneath the bed. And so literally this flare is like probably an inch from my ear and then comes up and is probably like 2 inches from my forehead. And I have to sleep with my head and my feet in these like little bump out cubbies. Ultimately, we figured out how to make it work. So okay. We figured out how to like move slowly so that we don't like, you know, wake up really quickly and hit our heads. And, you know, like we sleep pretty well when we're in the van, but it's pretty funny. It took us a little while to get to a place where we could do that and not be hitting our heads, which we now call noggin knocking. We created a term for it because it happens so often.
There are definitely trade-offs. Yeah.
Would you design it differently now knowing? Okay. So how would you do it now?
Yeah. I think we would go without the flares. We'd sleep front to back in the van and sacrifice an extra foot and a half of build space so that we can like have plenty of space, not hit our heads in any way and be very comfortable, especially because we have a dog that sleeps in the bed with us in the van because there's like nowhere else for her. So it's extra tight in there.
I'm sure you guys have thought of this since you spend hours in the van and you bump your head, but I'm like, can you turn him now and then have the dog sleep in the cubby area? Like that seems like a nice little nook.
Unfortunately, I don't think we could turn it now because I mean it would be too short.
There's stuff in the way. Yeah,
there's stuff in the way. And so we would have to like somehow move the shower like a foot and a half. Which seems or like that would be a lot of work.
Shower. Yeah, right.
We've figured it out and we're making it work and like we'll keep it how it is.
Yeah.
But if we could do it again, that's probably the one thing that we would change.
Yeah. That's tough. Like you don't know until you use it and then like you have ideas and whatever. And do you use the shower as often as you thought you would or do you, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we're hiking and playing disc golf, and so we're using the shower pretty frequently when we're traveling.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, that totally makes sense. Some people are like, you know what? I'd go without a shower, but I sweat a lot. I take like 2 showers a day if I'm like doing any kind of normal activity, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing with Ghost Bed is they have a cooling technology. So that's I'm a hot sleeper, and I think, either you're probably pretty hot or pretty cold in the van. I guess there's ventilation, but you're subject to the, you know, the geography of wherever you're at and the weather and all that stuff. But I'm typically a very hot sleeper all the time. We have the Ghost Bed Lux, and that has like some cooling technology in there. If you're unsure which Ghost Bed people may want to get, they have a 3-minute sleep quiz. They can follow the link. And this is new. So they've changed some of the pricing over at Ghost Bed. So if you looked before and you didn't buy anything yet, or even if you did, you can go over there and check it out. You can save 10% site wide, and they have new everyday low prices, but I'll put a link so people could check it out. Really appreciate the support from Ghost Bed. And if you dig the show, go have a look over there. They have all kinds of different sleeping accessories, including mattresses. They even have RV mattresses. So I don't know if you're happy with the one that you have, but it's light and it's thinner. You know, it's great for RVs. So thanks a lot to Ghost Bed. And we'll get back on topic here, which is around content creation. So I've been blogging since 2013 and then started doing some other stuff with podcasts and YouTube. And it's a crazy world out there. I'm glad I got started with it. It enabled me to work for myself, basically. But it is crazy out there and it's changed a lot with short form video and other things. And I'm in a good spot now where I don't have to worry about like any of the analytics or any of the metrics. And it's very freeing and it's really hard to get to that spot. So what has content creation been like for y'all? And actually, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, so content creation has done a lot for me, and it's been a somewhat untraditional path. So I started blogging in 2011, and it was kind of a passion project at first. It was actually pretty successful too. So I ended up generating more from blogging than my day job back in 2012. But instead of going all in to blogging, I actually took it in a different direction. So I leveraged the skills that I learned from blogging to then get a new job that paid me another $10,000, $20,000 per year. And that actually ended up being the career that I focused on for another decade while blogging off and on in the background for that decade. And it wasn't until 2018 that I convinced Jess to start a blog with me called The Fioneers that things really changed for us overall. And I don't know, Jess, if you want to share your experience with content creation.
Yeah. So I started blogging at that point. And for me, you know, for us at the time, it was still started out as a passion project. We wanted to share what we were learning on our path to FI and how we were taking this non-traditional path. I really enjoyed the process. And one thing that I feel like it was really valuable from it was writing something down and making it clear for other people made me get really clear on what I thought and believed and like what my perspective was about things rather than just like letting things swirl around in my head, which is what had, you know, sort of I had let happen up to that point. And so I felt like blogging really impacted me in a positive way and helped me to solidify my learnings. And then over time, you know, helped me get to a point where it was like, okay, I'm starting to see the questions that people have. I'm starting to understand who my audience is more. And so then about 2 years after starting the Fioneers is when I launched my group coaching program. And so when I started it, that was never the end goal. I had no idea that I would start a business doing group coaching, right? I had ideas of potentially doing retreats down the line. You know, I'd heard about courses, but it just turned out to be like, seemed to be the need in the community. And it felt like it was a need that I could meet. And then that's what's turned into probably the biggest part of the revenue in our business at this point. And so I think content creation can be really helpful and really generative. Like it brings you to places where you probably wouldn't imagine ending up, right? It brought Corey to this new career. It brought me to doing group coaching, which I didn't imagine doing either. And so I think there's just a lot of opportunities that can arise when you do it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the first blog in 2011?
Yeah, so it was mostly display ads. And then I was also pretty early on in the days where they were doing sponsored links. So I was definitely playing that game.
Okay, got it. And Corey, you will be joining me sometime in the future for my other show, which is more about like marketing and working online. So I didn't know because I started a little bit after you and I was hearing about like links and blah, blah, blah. I ended up going pretty deep into it and made most money from like affiliate marketing. Early on, there was a friend of mine who was doing some travel blogging. And I remember, I think he made like 25, they were traveling, right? He made like 25K in a month for a few months in a row selling links. And I was like, this is insane. And their expenses were super low because they were like, you know, staying in, you know, very cheap places, traveling, having a blast and making a huge amount of money, way more than what he was making in his corporate job, whatever it was. So anyway, very interesting. I ended up getting into course creation too, doing different kind of content, just like y'all. And it's interesting once you have the foundation and you kind of understand your audience and what they need help with, then there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, whether it's retreats or coaching or whatever, any kind of combo of any of those pieces. Because a lot of times people don't know what they're good at or what they want to do or what they'll enjoy. So sometimes something that is pretty profitable, you actually don't like that kind of work. And I ran into that and I was like, you know, I'm going to cut that out and stick to the things that I know I want to do.
One thing I'd like to note too is selling links is not something that I would encourage people to do anymore. Your friend did that. We did that back in the day. But that's a practice that's penalized by Google now. So if someone's listening to this and thinking, oh, I can just sell links, that it was people who were basically trying to game the search engine system, and it's penalized now. So I would not do that if I were you.
Good point. Yeah. The whole SEO area is insane at this point. Like everything kind of dropped out. Like I've retired all my courses, and I was on a podcast the other day. It's an agency that actually does like PR and some other stuff like that. So they're still operating, but I was like, yeah, I'll be on your show, but I'm not going to talk SEO. Like I have gone in another direction. I'm doing as little as work as I possibly can. And they were like, that's cool. We're bored talking about SEO. And like this, like, I don't know if we're going to keep doing the show like this because we don't want to talk to the same people saying the same things over and over again. So anyway,
yeah,
tread lightly. Don't sell links. Figure out something else to do instead. So as we're wrapping it up, because we could keep going on and on, but we'll kind of wrap it up. Overall, I'll let each of you give maybe some strategies and recommendations. You could shape it however you want. You could focus on certain parts each. You don't have to answer everything, but like we had a pretty good discussion about like where the person's at, our overall thoughts, and we can kind of wrap it up in a bow. So Jess, do you want to start this time?
I think the recommendation that I would have, or what I would tell Carl that I would want him to consider, is what if you could scale back your traditional employment earlier and use the time, right? The excess time, and hopefully eventually the excess energy to pour into these passion projects to see if they could grow and generate income, which then could allow Carl to leave his job that he doesn't enjoy earlier. And he wouldn't have to deal as much with those fears and with that scarcity mindset, because he would be building up his platform and he would be building up some income and seeing results from that to say, hey, I have some evidence that this is moving in a direction and that this has legs. And so it wouldn't be as much of a leap of faith, I guess, to move into this content creation. And worst case scenario is you do this as a passion project. You don't generate income from it, but you enjoy the process, learn valuable things from it, enjoy your life more as a result, and reach FI a tiny bit later.
There's two points that I'd want to make. One is that we haven't really addressed is to just acknowledge that it's normal to have these fears of scarcity, or these like thoughts of scarcity, that we all have money fears and it's okay to have them. And just because you have those fears doesn't mean you should grind it out and build up a larger buffer. There may be a better scenario where you can work through those fears, acknowledge them, and kind of see what's motivating them, and then be able to make the changes in your life that you want well before you reach this fat fire milestone. So I think it's important to acknowledge, first, it's normal. Like, we all have these fears. I have these fears. Jess has these fears. Doug has these fears, I imagine, right? I haven't heard them personally from you, but I see you nodding your head. The second point that I would add is just follow your curiosity. When I was reading the email exchange, or what Doug had shared, there was a lot of interest in content creation, and I could, you know, relate to it in many ways. And I think there's so much potential for people, not just in generating income, but as we were saying earlier, in building new networks and connecting and going places you wouldn't otherwise go. And so I would just encourage you to follow your curiosity and see where it takes you, because I think it could be a really exciting adventure.
as before, I'll try not to repeat what you guys said. I will emphasize, Corey, what you mentioned. Like, we all have like some scarcity mindset, even though like I'm kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum with like abundance and optimism. And I'm like, if something goes weird, I can figure out how to earn money or create value in some capacity. Like, I'm totally not worried about it. At the same time, I do think, should I buy the popcorn and Sprite and coffee? And the answer, not in the future, probably not. Yesterday, it served me really well. The point being, like, hopefully you can develop like a strategy to make sure that you know what you can do, what spreadsheets you could look at, or what activities you could do to help snap you out of it. Because like you said, Corey, like everyone is going to have some scarcity piece where you're like, did I save enough? Did I make a bad decision? Did I, you know, I was born in the wrong year. So like I invested in a different, you know, time scale, and, you know, there's some stuff we can't control. So it's just like, you're going to have to figure it out the best that you can. The other area around the content creation, I think it looks really cool. And like, I'm a big YouTube consumer and a podcast listener, and it seems like everyone's doing that, but that just happens to be the thing that I am consuming. And it might be the same in Carl's case here. So it may seem like everybody's doing content creation, but it's only a handful of us that are doing it. And there's mostly people are not creating content. There can be some great opportunities. There's a good chance it's going to be completely different than whatever you think it's going to be. So I give the example often where like maybe you start a show and you do some stuff and it doesn't really go anywhere, but you start going to a conference and then you meet some people and then you have a partnership and then you collaborate with someone and you actually like start a business together, and you could, you know, check out some podcasts and you'll find people that like it was the third thing they worked on or the fifth thing, and that is the big show. And you're just putting yourself out there and letting people know that you're available to do stuff and you're cool to hang out with and that sort of thing. So it may not be the first thing that you try. It's definitely not going to work. It's going to be like way further on, but once you get started, you'll build those skills. So as we are wrapping up here, what is going on with y'all, say, in the next 6 months or year? What things should we share? And I know you have a calculator that will help Carl, but also many other people if they're approaching CoastFi. So I asked a few questions, and I'll let you all sort it out.
So in the next 6 months, we actually are really excited to spend time in our home location. We mentioned earlier on the show being part-time van lifers, and we actually did just get back from a 3-week trip. But we, as a result of van life and loving the outdoors, we decided to move to northern New Hampshire, to the White Mountains. And so we're really excited to explore our local area and hike and stand up paddleboard and, you know, be outside and enjoy the mountains for the summer.
At the end of summer, we're also going out to Lake Tahoe to host our annual SloFi retreat. The tickets are sold out for this year, but we do host an annual SloFi retreat. So if people are interested in future retreats, we can definitely send a link to the wait list for future retreats.
Crazy. How many people go to those retreats?
So 45 is the limit. I think for 2026, we're planning to run 2 different retreats, but still cap it at 45. And so we'll have a couple different locations and like maybe different seasons of the year next year for people to join us at retreats.
Very cool.
45 seems to be like the sweet spot for like an intimate setting. You can get to know a lot of new faces, meet old friends, but it's not too overwhelming at the same time.
Right. And one thing I'll mention, I bought a ticket to CampFi Rocky Mountain week 1. Steven, the organizer, the founder, he added 2 more weeks and they sold out. So he added 1 more. So there's 1.5. So I'm going to speak at 1.5. However, week 1, I was like, I'm going to give away my ticket to promote the show. So I think when this episode comes out, the contest will be open. So it's one of those like sign up for the email list and then subscribe to my YouTube channel and then you get entries, but I'm giving away my ticket because these things are like selling out. It's so awesome. So anyway, tell me about the calculator. What do you guys have?
So we have a CoastFi calculator, and I would definitely encourage Carl and anybody who's listening to the show to check it out. And basically what that's going to help you do is really get a clear understanding of your numbers and what your numbers mean for your life today. So not just this is how long it's going to take me to reach FI, right? It'll tell you, have you reached CoastFi yet? If you have reached CoastFi, right, that means you could scale back and only cover your actual expenses. And it allows you to run different scenarios. And so something that really helps us is to, you know, when those worst case scenarios pop into our minds, then we can actually put them into the calculator and say, oh, what if the average market returns for the next 24 years are only like 3% instead of 7%, like for inflation adjusted, like would we still be okay? Right. And it allows us to actually put that in and be like, oh yeah, we would still be okay. You know, or what if we only generate, like if we cut our income in half because like business does badly for like a year or something, like how would that impact us? And then you usually look at it and you're like, oh, I would still be okay. And so that's something that people can do with the calculator as well. That's really, really helpful to help give people confidence and work through that scarcity mindset.
Very good. We'll link up so people can get to that. And any other links that you guys want to share, we'll put them in the show notes so people can get to it. So anything else, any final words before we sign off?
Thanks so much for having this. This is a really great conversation.
Yeah, so fun. I feel like we can keep going and going, but I know we have other stuff to do today. So thanks a lot, and we'll catch up with y'all soon. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Y'all watch van life YouTubers, and I love watching that stuff too, even though I have there's 0% chance I'm going to build out a van or do any kind of stuff. I'll probably rent one and check it out. Who do you like to watch?
Back in the day, two of our favorites, or my favorites, were Eamon and Beck and Kara and Nate. Kara and Nate are more like adventure, travel, like somewhat travel and like some segments of van life, which is how we discovered them. But those were two of my favorite.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say Kara and Nate also. They got into van life during the pandemic, though we're full-time travelers for many, many years. And they had absolutely no idea about anything about van life. They just picked it up because they couldn't travel internationally for a while during the pandemic. And so they were definitely really like fun and relatable for people who were just getting into it, to like see like just the funny realities of like everything that could go wrong, yet still having these really like epic experiences at the same time. Yeah. So yeah, really, really appreciated them. And there's probably a new crop of van life YouTubers coming up that we don't know about.
Yeah, makes sense. I did not know of Kara and Nate until maybe like the last few months. Do you guys know Dusty Young? You know Dusty? Did you run into her? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Dusty like sent a video of when they went to Bucky's, probably in Texas. I think they went to a Bucky's location because one opened up like 30 minutes away from here. So she was like, yeah, check it out. I still haven't been to the Bucky's. I'll go someday, like during the week, so it won't be crowded, and get a brisket sandwich. And they're, so I saw that one. And then, you know, YouTube, it suggests something. I love Leadville. And then they had the Leadville 100 experience. And I watched like, I think it was like a training video and then the whole thing, which each of those were like, they're like feature film length. They did a really great job, like an hour and a half. And again, I love Leadville. So I'm like, oh yeah, I know that spot and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to do an ultra marathon. I don't even run. I'm like, oh, this seems awesome. I mean, but obviously it's not. It's like 24 hours of running at 10,000 feet or higher. Yeah, Kara, Nate, they're so freaking positive.
I know. So
upbeat, but some of their stuff, like you said, they're doing like, I mean, they've evolved. So they're doing like more luxury travel. Like they have enough. I mean, they're some of the biggest travel YouTubers. Like, are they the biggest? I mean, they have like 5, 6
Maybe.
Million.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Yeah. I don't know. They are quite big though. They definitely weren't as big when we started watching them.
Yeah.
But they were very popular.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you guys still watch van life YouTubers then, or is it kind of you're saturated with information now?
Right? Not really. I think part of it is because of the van life YouTubers that we started watching 5 years ago have then transitioned to other content. Like I think it's Trent and Allie, if I'm not mistaken, who like have an incredible series on like traveling through Central and South America in their van. But now are like doing home renovations, and it's like, okay, like
it's like a home renovation YouTube channel, or like Eamon and Bex now is like, it's like basically like, how do you travel with a toddler is like the basically what they, because it's like all these people either now have homes or kids, and so they're more like lifestyle creators. And it's more like, this is our life for the last week. But like, they didn't really do anything all that interesting for people who are child-free.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I used to get frustrated when people evolved their content, but it's totally normal because like, that's what's going on with their life. That said, I talked about affiliate marketing and SEO on my other show. Like, that's what it was. And the last couple episodes, I think the last episode I was like, AI recipes suck, right? I'm just complaining about, I mean, it's purely self-indulgent. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm still putting out the content. I wonder why sometimes, but I'm like, yeah, it's evolved. I'm not talking about affiliate marketing or stuff that I'm not doing anymore. So I get it. I get
but it. But it's all, happens. Yeah. I mean, you can do that because of your position, right? And you don't need to stick to a core message. And it's more around like your interest in putting out content.